Welcome one and all once again to Dual Wielding Episode 63. We have a really quiet show this week. We're going to get to some stuff that we touched on last week, but the controversy continues on with Mass Effect 3. But until then, joining us this week, we have Martin.
Hi.
We have Daniel.
Hello.
And we have Jason.
Hello.
Who sounds exhausted even though it's past noon his time. So,
not exhausted.
I said you sound exhausted.
I'm a little stuffed up today. That's probably
true. So yeah, this week we're going to start off with what you've been playing. Harshy, because Martin has a new member of his family. And, you know, he wants to share some light on that. And I've also been playing that the major game that came out. One of the major games that came out this week. I think there was something like four or five of them. Even though I think three of them kind of reviewed poorly. With Operation Raccoon City, I want to say Downpour, and there was something else. I think the Silent Hill HD collection didn't do too hot either.
Yeah.
Oh, Ninja Gaiden 3. That's the third one.
Such a shame.
Well, this is like many people were surprised on most of those games, especially Resident Evil Operation Raccoon City.
I don't think anyone was surprised about that game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And since none of us are paid, let's start with Martin and tell us about your new purchases.
Well, I bought the 3DS yesterday, and with it I got Super Mario 3D Land, which isn't really a new game, so I'm not going to talk much about it. Except I will say it's probably the best use of 3D I've seen yet, and
Okay,
but before we, the other game you picked up was Kid Icarus Uprising.
Yeah.
Before we get to that, I just want you to share why you bought a 3DS.
Why?
If I'm not mistaken, didn't you say it was because you were bored and you just had to buy something?
I was deprived of sleep, and I don't think, despite my better judgment, I just thought, I'm gonna get one anyway someday, so why not now?
Like you were just walking by a game store or something?
Yeah, kinda.
And this is why we need better impulse control. But, yes, you face it with Mario 3D, and the other game you picked up was Kid Icarus Uprising, which I assume was the game that tipped you over.
Yeah, absolutely. I was curious about the game, yeah.
So what are your thoughts on the game?
It's kind of a weird game for Nintendo, I think. It's weirdly postmodern, in the sense that it's really aware of itself being a game, and makes weird references to the first Kid Icarus, story-wise, stuff like that. It's really not something I expected from Nintendo, that, first of all.
I think it's something they've done before. I think Conker's done it, and the Paper Mario games are usually self-referential in that sense. But I think the major difference with Kid Icarus is that it's fully voice-acted throughout the entire campaign.
That as well, yeah. And the dialogue is actually kind of clever and witty and fun.
Yeah, I enjoy it. I know it's not everybody's cup of tea, but I do think that it's a game that knows what it's trying to be.
Yeah,
and it excels at that. It's you know, it's a game that knows its history. It knows it you know, it makes fun of the fact that Pitch
history of one about other game.
Well, it makes fun of that history, but it also makes fun of the history of just the franchise and being a Nintendo thing. Because I don't know how far Martin is, but I just finished the chapter.
stage 9, chapter 9.
Okay, so you're right where I'm at. I just finished stage 9, chapter 9. And like one of the things, he makes references to Nintendog, because one of the bosses is a three-headed dog, and he's like, oh, it's going to up my trainer's points in Nintendogs. So awesome, stuff like that. So it does, you know, it's aware if it's a video game. It makes references to bosses. It makes references a lot of times to, like, hey, is it this guy from the original game? And then on the bottom screen, you'll have, like, the 2D sprite.
Yeah, there was this other thing where you find this treasure, and then Pit says something like, hey, this looks pretty good. Way less pixelated than the last time.
Yeah.
Something like that. Great.
You know, it does make fun of video game cliches. Like, I think it's chapter 2 at one point. There's, like, a chest that's out there in the open, and, like, your companion's, like, who needs a chest sitting out there? It looks like a trap. He's like, no, of course not. It's not a trap. And of course, it turns out to be a trap. And he's like, you actually fell for that.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. And just the exchanges between Pitt and Palutena are fantastic. Because he has like the biggest crush on her and he treats him like such a dog.
And I have to say, if this is the future for Nintendo games, story and voice acting wise, I would be very happy with that.
Well, I'm gonna say it's not the future for Nintendo games. I mean, it's the same thing with kind of Smash Brothers, where I think in a lot of ways it's always been ahead of the curve as far as Nintendo games go, because Sakurai doesn't really play by the rules that Nintendo tends to work with.
Probably. We should probably also talk about the gameplay.
yes.
The flying sequence, first of all, I have to say, I'm a lefty, so the default control scheme doesn't really work for me, because you have to control the movement of Pit with the slide pad and then aim with the touch screen, and I'm not really comfortable this way. I tried.
It's not that comfortable for right-handed people either.
Okay, I tried moving with the buttons, but that wasn't much better either. So I basically used this dual analog stick layout with moving Pit with the slide pad and aiming with the buttons, and it actually works fine for me. I have aiming assist on, so that's kind of generous, I guess. So I'm fine this way. And the flying sequence, I think, are really, really fun. Really quick, nice action, kind of reminds myself of Star Fox, so that's great. the on-foot sequences, I think a lot of reviews probably make it sound worse than it actually is. I don't think the controls are perfect. They have some problems. I don't really get why I have to stop and then move the stick in one direction to initiate a dash. Why couldn't it be like a double tap or something like that? Or maybe use the R button? I don't know.
But you can... Maybe I'm just saying it wrong. But you can dash while moving, can't you?
No, you have to center the stick and then move in a quick direction.
Oh, okay. I'm just so used, because the only time I really use dash is during actual combat, and that's automatic as long as you move in a direction.
No.
Well, in my experience, it is. Like, moving out of the way of, like, attacks and stuff. But
yeah.
I could be mistaken.
Moving out of attacks, maybe, but I mean, like, the
dash standard attacks. Yeah.
For
it's
stuff
kinda
like that.
Smash Brothers, where you have to... Yeah. It's like a direction and attack at the same time.
Yeah, I think that they probably could have figured out something better, I think. Otherwise, I think it's fine. But I think the flying sequences are definitely the better part of the game.
Yeah. The only thing I dislike about the flying sequences, not so much them themselves, is the fact that so far there's only been two bosses that have taken place in the sky.
Mm.
And even Heedrew was kind of a mini-boss since you go on the ground to continue to fight.
Yeah, true.
So there's that. I've gotten accustomed to the ground controls now. I don't think they're bad. I just think they're radically different than anything we've played in another game, which is why it's such a learning curve.
Mm.
My biggest issue, though, is that it's the difference sometimes between walking and dashing is really sensitive. So there was one chapter, I want to say 7, where you had to extend on a little tiny platform while dodging enemy fire.
Oh, right, yeah.
I would dodge, and then he would just go flying off that platform.
Yeah, that's why I said I would probably prefer dash, like doing a quick double tap in one direction or something like that. That because that way you don't initiate it by accident.
Yeah. So yeah, that was frustrating because I ended up losing a knife. And
I have a question.
Yeah.
Does this game support the Frankenstick?
It does.
It does, but not for Duke Analog.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. You basically can use the right analog stick, but then you still have to use the touchscreen.
I mean, it's basically what I said when the Frankenstick was announced. It doesn't seem like something Nintendo wanted. It's just a way for them to appease third parties, and they really are going out of their way not to use it if they can.
But I think it's a shame. I actually just learned about that yesterday, I think this morning, because I was thinking, maybe I will pick up the Circle Pad tomorrow, because playing Dual Analog would be perfect for me. It's kind of a no-brainer if you think about it, so I don't really know why Nintendo didn't implement it.
Like I said, I just assume they're being stubborn. They tend to do that. What else was I going to mention about the gameplay? Music is fantastic.
Music is fantastic, yes. Exceptionally well done music.
Yes. Oh, the other thing I was going to mention, and I hope a lot of games, I mean, not every game can use it, but going forward, I would like to see something akin to the intensity meter in other games.
That's pretty
instead of having fixed like easy, medium, or hard difficulties, you have a sliding pad, I think, which goes from 1 to 9, and you're basically betting on your own performance. So if you start a stage at 9 and you complete it, you get better weapons, you get more hearts and stuff like that. But if you die, it will drop down to like 800, and you'll lose like half of your hearts that you bet on yourself and stuff like that. So
also when you if you have a higher difficulty level, you also get better loot, which is another cool system of the game. Because there's different kind of loot. Weapon. I don't think there's that much of a weapon variety, but every weapon has different stats, so that still makes it pretty kind of interesting.
I mean, there are, I think there's, 8 or 9 classes of weapons, which is a lot to begin with. I mean, they basically all kind of control the same.
But I mean, sometimes you say loot and people think, oh, Diablo variety or something like that. But it's not quite that.
Yeah. And you know, each one has just different effects and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And also the other thing that the intensity gates does, I mean, is that there are intensity gates. So like, if you go on a stage, there might be a gate that you have to reach level 5 to get to. So it does kind of encourage replayability, because there are parts of the stages you can't get to if you're playing on like easy or, you know, normal, or, you know, like between like a 2 and a 5 or something like that.
And I think replayability is also really key in general with this game. I think it has a lot of content. Even if you finish the game, it seems like there's still a lot more to do. You have, like I said, these gates you can still open. There is always maybe trying to fuse better weapons, because you can also fuse different weapons together and then you get stats from each one. You can perform something like achievements. Basically, you have little challenges which unlock other stuff, like
your power wall.
Yeah, that's the power wall. Yeah, like Smash Bros. You can kind of collect not trophies. What do we call these things?
Idols.
Idols, exactly.
The AR cards.
The AR cards, exactly. Multiplayer.
You guys haven't mentioned
multiplayer.
The multiplayer. Yet.
I haven't played.
What else is there?
Yet.
You can offer up hearts
to
what's
Patina.
Exactly. Yeah. I don't know yet what it does, but...
Well, the game says it does nothing, and so far I'm willing to bet the game's telling the truth here, but we'll see.
We'll see.
But just real quickly on the multiplayer, I haven't played it yet because I want to finish the campaign first, and this tends to be my general rule for most games.
I tried it out.
I was going to say, and I guess Martin can speak to it. I do, again, it introduces a novel idea into the series where, like, this is, you know, sometimes an issue people have with Call of Duty, where, like, as you get further and further into the game, you get more power weapons and stuff like that, so it's harder for new people to kind of get in. So what this does is, in order for, you know, people to use whatever they want in the game, is that you kind of have a risk-reward. So if you bring in, like, a higher level weapon, if you die, you use more points for your team than if you were to bring in a basic weapon. So you're basically betting your skill level with your weapon. And if you die, like, say you take 3 lives instead of 1 when you do. And I think that's a novel idea.
It's interesting, but it's not exactly novel. It's kind of, if you know the Gundam Versus games for arcade, it's kind of the same. You can pick a better robot and you have this life gauge for your whole team. If you pick a better robot, the life gauge depletes faster. So it's kind of stolen from that series, but...
Nobody plays Gundam, so...
Well... I think the multiplayer is actually kind of interesting and fun, because you play you play 3v3. It's kind of like the ground levels in the single-player game. like Earl said, you, when you die, your team loses energy from their gorge. If it's completely depleted, the last player gets to play Pit. And if the enemy team kills Pit, then that team wins. Kind of simple, but fun.
So that's a team deathmatch that turned into VIP at the end.
Yeah, kinda, yeah.
Okay. And, I mean, just to bring it all home, I guess, there's also, not the AR cards, what was I gonna mention?
Not sure.
No, I'm drawing a blank now. Okay, but yeah, that's Kid Icarus. So far it's been a fantastic game. And it was something I questioned during the week, is a lot of reviews do mention that the controls are kind of iffy. And I was wondering how so many people gave good reviews with that, because usually if controls are iffy, it's a deal-breaker for me.
I did the same. I think I even mentioned on Twitter, I really wondered why the reviews were still that good with so much complaints about the controls.
Yeah, and it's because, honestly, I don't think the controls are broken or bad, or they just take some getting used to, and it is a mental gap that you have to work through.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I also wish that the multiplayer had some way supported the on or the in-air section, but I assume that would be difficult to do. So. I mean, Star Fox does it.
Mm. Oh, also interesting about the multiplayer is that you can also get loot from the multiplayer. Basically, if you play against better players, you can also get some nice loot from there, which is interesting.
Oh, did not know about that. Okay, so Jason or Daniel, do you have anything to talk about?
I also said something else.
Oh, let me see what these two have to say first. Dan, you said no.
No, I haven't got any money, so I haven't been able to buy anything.
Jason?
Just been making the rounds of some multiplayer games this week. I guess really quick I could talk about Mass Effect 3. I'm just that I'm impressed that they're doing any kind of support. Like, this weekend and last weekend, they had, like, a multiplayer event. This weekend, it's basically, like, extra XP. Last weekend, it was, they set, like, parameters. Like, if you did a silver challenge against Reapers, then you would get an extra, a special equipment pack. And if all, the whole community of online players killed 1 million brutes, which is, like, a heavy, Reaper enemy person, then everyone would also get a special, a separate equipment pack. So, I guess just impressed that the multiplayer is holding up better than I ever expected.
Well, I mean, it's been 2 weeks, but yeah.
But it's like Mass Effect 3, you know, you kind of expect it to be a throw-in, and given the BioWare's pedigree, I wasn't surprised that it was actually fun to play. But I didn't see myself really coming back that much. But I like this idea, and they're not the first studio to do this, but to have community events in the multiplayer, and on a weekly basis. Like, Gears is really good at doing this. You know, Call of Duty has their double XP weekends and stuff. But I think that's a really interesting way for studios to really keep their audience engaged in the multiplayer.
Okay. And going back to Martin, what was the last game you've been playing?
I have been playing Birds of Steel, which is also a new release, which probably nobody knows about because there is no promotion for it or anything.
Well, I know about it. It's a airplane game, which has an odd name.
It's probably the most generic name you can have for a World War II flight sim. It's by Gaijin, made by the Gaijin Entertainment and published by Konami, weirdly enough. Gaijin Entertainment has been doing a couple of flight sims before for the consoles. They did IL-2 Sturmovik and also Apache Air Assault. They are also doing simulations for the PC. And because I got the bug for flight sims lately, I thought, why not get this game? And it's actually kind of nice. They have a historic campaign where you can play the American and the Japanese side during in the Pacific Theater. They have dynamic campaigns which change depending on your performances during the missions. They have single missions. They have multiplayer. They have you can also play all these campaigns in co-op mode, which I think is interesting. And it's actually a nice game for newbies when it comes to simulation games, because you can basically make it as easy to fly as any arcade flying game, but you can also make it really realistic, which is fun for me.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting. A game that caters to Sims and arcade fans.
Yeah, it works really well, I think.
Okay. So, yeah, Burns is still. I'm sure Donnie would be happy for that, because somebody on my Twitter who's been talking about of that game for like a month now. So, yeah. So, that will do it for us this week, and I guess we'll go to news. And like I said, it's been a really quiet week for the most part. I guess we'll start with the news of the week, which was Epic Mickey 2, The Power of Two for...
And The Power of Illusion.
And I was going to mention The Power of Illusion. The Power of Two sounds like a Disney song, which is all you fit in since we found out that Epic Mickey is also part musical. Which I'm actually kind of curious for, because I don't know of many games that have used music as a means to tell story.
This certainly fits with the Disney theme, as Warren Spector said, so...
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, if it fits with the theme, it's just, I'm kind of curious. I'm curious if it's going to be, like, people who break into songs randomly, or if there will be gameplay segments.
I would think there should be gameplay sections. It'd be pretty boring if you just sort of relegated them to cutscenes or whatever.
Yeah, because, I mean, I've seen a few examples. I think somebody pointed out that there's a Nightmare Before Christmas, game that does that, with it turns into musical. Like, you'll have boss battles where the boss will start singing while you're engaging in battles. That's kind of cool. So yeah, I'm kind of curious to see where they take it. And, you know, with the idea that this is a musical on three systems and Disney, the 700 people start to add up, because then you have to have composers and lyrics and singers and stuff like that. But it's still insane to have 700 people working on this game.
Also was some gameplay of the game, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and I was going to say, it's also kind of insane that there's 700 people, since as far as I can tell, this is an upward of the Wii game.
Yeah, I looked at it, and I was immediately disappointed with it, because it apparently was the 360 version, which really was just a Wii upport, and the graphical style just looked just like the first game.
Yeah, I mean, in some ways it makes sense, because they have a Wii engine built, because they made a game for a Wii, but yeah, I'm sure a lot of people are going to be disappointed in the fact that it's basically like an HD remake of Epic Mickey 2.
Yeah.
Also, it has no Kinect support, even though it supports the Wiimote and the Move on the PS3.
That surprising, to be honest.
I guess it would be difficult, but I could see potential for some type of Kinect mini games or something in the game.
Yeah, that's probably true.
We mentioned last week it has co-op with Oswald and Mickey. Just drop in and drop out at any time, and I believe it's one of those games where, like, Oswald will be with you the entire time anyhow. So if you don't want a stupid computer player, probably find a friend. Did they mention if it's online co-op or if it's couch co-op?
I'm not sure.
Because that kind of bummed me out about Rayman Origins.
I would assume it would be at least online.
You see, if anything, I would assume it's at least couch, because it's a Wii game. It's not really known for its online gaming, so...
You know what would be an awesome feature for a game like this, which is partly musical?
Rock Band
support. No, a karaoke mode.
It would make more sense than in the Star Wars game.
Yeah, right? I just thought about it. It would be an awesome mode to have in something like this.
Yeah, unlock the songs as you play and you get to sing them out. Yeah, I could see that as a great bonus, especially if you can sell DLCs to get people to buy more songs and stuff like that.
Somebody call Warren Spector.
You just know this is going to delay the game to 2013.
No, they can always add 300 more people.
Because, yes, that's the more sensible thing to do. I'm still kind of curious to see if this is going to make back its budget, so we shall see. We had our first trailers of Little Big Planet Karting, which is made by the people who made Mod Nation Races.
So this is even more of a rip than it could be anyway.
I actually think it looks novel. I think it has a lot of interesting features from the trailer.
That all I saw in the trailer was Mod Nation Races, but with cardboard boxes as cars instead of...
Well, that was one of the first things that stuck out to me in the trailer, is that if you watch it, you can like see the tires going into the car.
Yeah.
Which is odd, but I do like that they are incorporating some of the little big-handed ideas, like using the lasso or the, for parts of it, so you kind of have platforming elements in your racer, and it looks like it has boss battles, which is something that Mario Kart doesn't do often.
Yeah. I also think it looks better than any of the Mod Nation games in general, from the art style to the
graphics. Well, that's because Mod Nation doesn't really have an art style for the most part.
Was it Mod Nation just kind of ripping off Little Big Planet anyhow?
Yeah.
It just didn't go as far. So this, yeah, it does have a better art style, you know, customizable cards and characters, which is cool. I'm sure, it has all these features. I'm sure a lot of people just are curious if it's going to have the old times of Mod Nation Racer.
Yeah, that was what killed
that's
the
impossible,
game for
right?
me.
Well, it's made by the same people, so...
Anyone know how the Vita game is doing? Is it even out yet?
The Vita game was a launch title, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it was
a launch title. All the loading time for that game.
I'm just assuming nobody played it like most of the Vita games. Actually, let's not say too much. I'll explain why later. But yes, Little Big Planet card, it looks interesting. I'm curious, though, because he just had a new Mario Kart, and the rumor on the table is that Sega is doing a Sonic and Sega All-Star Races 2, if Little Big Planet's going to get lost in the shuffle, because I think Sonic is still a bigger brand than Little Big Planet.
Well, it's multi-platform for a start, so...
And that, too.
Well, I think they're... It would have to differentiate itself with the creation stuff, just like regular Little Big Planet.
Yeah, but even then, that hasn't really helped the franchise.
Well, it hasn't helped Mod Nation, but that's helped Little Big Planet. That's what it's all about.
But yeah, it's Little Big Planet. It's a fun game. It's just not a huge brand, and we'll see how far it takes it. But I don't think it's going to be enough people to spin off into a successful IP. I mean, it will do better than Mod Nation Racers, but that's not saying a lot.
I have to say I'm interested. I was very skeptical when we first talked about it. I was skeptical, but I think what I've seen looks interesting. If it ends up being good, I will probably play it.
Yeah, I'm all for more kart races. I mean, you know, Mario Kart's usually the dominant one.
Yeah.
But there's no reason that we only need one kart race and everybody's trying to do the Mario Kart style. I mean, I have Diddy Kong Racing on the N64. I've heard nothing but great things about Crash Team Racer. Some people like Sonic and Sega All-Star Racer 1.
Mm.
There's a market for it, and more variety is always great for this industry.
It kind of feels like end of the 90s, early 00s with all these kart racing games around.
Yeah. That's to be something. I guess you can't all make first-person shooters. Even though you're the Big Planet, first-person shooter might be interesting. I have no idea how to pronounce this. The Rhythm Final Fantasy?
Screw Square Enix's names. They're just really stupid now.
Well, now? It's Theater and Rhythm.
This entire generation.
Now more so than ever.
Wasn't in the Iwata Ask thing, like Iwata saying, "Oh, Theaterism. It's so easy to say."
Maybe for him, maybe it makes more sense in Japanese, who knows.
Maybe.
But yes,
that's dumb.
It's announced for Europe and North America this summer.
Which is nice.
I think
the game looks good.
I haven't played it. Obviously, I don't have a Japanese 3DS, but it does seem like a game that would benefit from being like $30 instead of $40. I know it has the Final Fantasy brand on it, but that doesn't always help you, as Final Fantasy XIII 2 earned.
From what I've heard, it's pretty full with content.
Yeah.
Whatever happened to Versus, by the way?
We don't speak about Versus.
That game's coming out in 10 years. 2.
We've had the portable ones. We've had, you know, so many games, and still nothing but, what, 2 trailers for Versus?
I think the most recent word from Nomura is that he can't, he wants to tell people about it, but he can't due to outside forces or something like that. That was his quota on the line. So, yeah, it's the Duke Nukem Forever of this generation.
Yeah, kind of.
Microsoft announced their next promotion for their arcade titles, which is Arcade Next. I think this starts in mid-April. I think the first game is like the 18th. It's Fables, Heroes, Minecraft, it's Trials 2, and I think it's Dreadforge.
Do we know in which order the games will be coming out?
I don't know. Do you have it on hand, Errol?
I don't have it on hand. I'll Google it. But I think the first one might be... I think it's Fables, Heroes, because I think that's April 18th.
So the least interesting. Okay.
Okay, no. Trials of Evolution is April 18th. Dreadforge is April 25th. Fable Heroes is May 2nd. And Minecraft Xbox 360 edition is May 9th.
Nice. So Trials is the first one. I'm mostly excited for that game.
Me too. Trials 1 was phenomenal.
And not just because I guess it has to be said because somebody's going to... Yeah, people complain about it already, is that Minecraft will also mark the first, I think, Xbox Live Arcade game that's $20 or $16.
Yeah, screw that.
Seems insane.
No, I don't understand why anybody would buy Minecraft on a 360 anyway, but it's
going to
happen.
How much is it on PC now?
I think it's 25, about $25 on PC,
well, so
I think.
Well, to be fair, you are getting a game that's $5 cheaper.
Yeah, but the,
with,
yeah, but
with,
the thing
with
is...
Kinect integration.
Well,
no,
I didn't buy Minecraft.
It's not
for
coming
25.
With Kinect integration. That's being patched in later.
Oh, that's pretty weird.
And this is where I get to. I don't understand why anybody would buy
it.
I don't know why anyone would buy Minecraft on the 360 because it's going to be an old version of Minecraft to start with. I think it's like 1.6, and they're going to update it to current version later.
That never works. I'm still waiting for my Team Fortress 2 update.
they're charging full price for it. Well, more than full price if you count XBLA pricing structure. They're not giving the Kinect integration that they promised yet. And not only that is you don't get all the cool stuff that you have on the PC version. Like, you can't have your own texture packs and you can't mod it and all sorts. And, you know, you can't... It's just not as, like... Like, the PC version, you can do more with it, you know? And let's face it, who owns a 360 and doesn't own a PC?
Well, I don't think
lots
that's necessary.
Lots of people.
I was going to say, I'm sure there's more people who own PCs than own 360s.
Also, the game is not really taxing on PC. Pretty much everything should be played.
Yeah, I don't know how many people would... A lot of people, I think, have this mental barrier with PC gaming and just the stigma usually associated with it being that you always have to...
But for a lot of people, Minecraft was also the game that broke down the stigma and, oh, I'll play this. Oh, yeah, it's actually really good, and they bought it.
Well,
so,
I mean, you can't fault Microsoft for trying, and we'll see how it works out.
Basically, Microsoft was like, let's just get this out as fast as we can and charge as much as we can for it.
What they said was, we need another title to complete this promotion. And
yeah. So they decided to fart out Minecraft as fast as they can. And they decided.
I think the biggest deal is not launching with Kinect support.
Yeah.
Because at that E3 press conference
that was
the entire point of this game.
Yeah, and that's what set it apart from
PC. And with Kinect support, you could make a case that it's worth $20 because it's a totally different experience. But without it, I don't know.
As I say, I would think it's a lot more tedious to do with a controller, but I've actually never played Minecraft, so we shall see.
I can't see how it will work very well with Kinect, let's put it that way.
I'm sure. We'll see.
I also think
that
what I've seen of the Xbox version, the interface for the console version actually looks nice, though. Because they integrated the Minecraft wiki into the game, so you can see at all times what you can build with what and stuff like that. So they actually thought about what they're doing with the console version, at least give them that.
Okay. We have Prey 2 cancellation.
No.
Rumored that it's being canceled.
No, they can't cancel Prey 2. It's like the only game that I was looking forward to this year, and they can't. And now everyone's saying, "Oh, what if they've cancelled it?" I will hate Bethesda if that happens. Seriously, that game looks so good.
I mean, games get cancelled all the time. I think a lot of people are just kind of curious as to why, because as you mentioned, I think it was met with kind of positive reactions at E3. And
a lot of positive reactions.
Who cares if it doesn't have Tommy as the main character? It's dystopian, alien, you're a bounty hunter, parkour. Yes, give me this game.
Yeah, we've seen people... I shouldn't say we've seen games, but they've gotten rid of the main characters and stuff like that, so that shouldn't be a big deal.
No, and I think people, that was a big question going into E3, but not coming out of it, so, you know.
Yeah, it was pretty much, everyone was skeptical, then the journalists saw the game, everyone was like, man, this looks really cool, like, open world, first-person shooter, where you're a bounty hunter and can approach all these situations every way you want. Sounds great to me. So, I'm not really sure why it's getting cancelled. Maybe it's something we don't know. The project got into some real big trouble. Maybe. We don't know.
I mean, but if the original could have lasted 7 years or whatever it took for that to come out.
Yeah, maybe Bethesda just isn't as patient.
Yeah, I don't think they were the publisher for the original one either.
No, they weren't. 2K was.
The only reason why they are now is because the developer uses Id Engine.
Oh, okay. Oh, so Prey 2 was being built on Id Engine?
Prey 1 was on Id Engine, so...
Yeah.
Is Prey 2 on Id Engine 5 or whatever the Rage one was?
No.
I think it is, because... It'd be a bit silly to use the old one now that it's open source.
I think it was running It Take 4 still, right?
I don't know.
Definitely not It Take 5.
We don't use facts on these podcasts.
Yeah, It Take 4. I'm right. That's okay. Important.
But does it matter if it's cancelled?
Yes.
So yeah, there's that.
Maybe cancelled. We should
maybe cancelled.
It better fucking not be. That's the way I'm sitting here thinking. It better not be cancelled, Bethesda.
But it's curious that Bethesda is refusing to comment on it. So
yeah, because on Doom 4, which faced similar cancellation rumors, they flat out were like, "No, it's not cancelled."
Exactly.
And this time they're like, "No comment."
Okay, and assuming this is going to go with the time finance 4 for Daniel, where he's just going to have a bunch of
things.
So yes, and that brings us to the final piece of news of the week again, which still centers around EA, BioWare, Mass Effect 3, and the community. This week, I guess to add a new wrinkle, there were several wrinkles added to this story, but I think the most important was the head or co-founder of BioWare coming out saying that they are... if reviewing their options, it's going to make an announcement sometime in April about what they're going to do with the ending of the game. And, of course, this set off a storm of reactions, which is, I think, funny because they haven't said either way what they're doing. But a lot of people mentioned that they lost respect for BioWare. I've seen a lot of people who have said that this will be their set video games back 10 years or video games will never be taken seriously as an art form with this type of reaction. So before we get there, what were your thoughts on this?
Mine were, not as crazy version of what everything you just said. More realistic and toned down. But, I mean, it is a blow to the artistic integrity of the medium when you can have a small but very vocal group of fans basically demand the creator to change their game, the ending of their game, because they didn't like it, and say, we want the ending that we deserve. And
well,
I think...
But also, Jason, this is... I was watching... I mean, I know this is going to kick off with some people, but Jim Sterling was saying that this means that video games have grown up. It means that it's as a media, games are actually so important to people now that this stuff happens. You know, it happened to books, it's happened to film, and now it's finally happening to video games. So on the other hand, it's not all bad. You know,
I'm sorry, I when was there a book or a film that had a petition signed that demanded Arthur that Conan Doyle.
Arthur Conan Doyle killed off Sherlock.
And people petitioned and he brought Sherlock back. And he brought Sherlock back, to con one of his stories. Well, the one where he killed him off. It's the same one, I think, where Moriarty died.
Movies get re-edited all the time.
Yeah, I was going to say the example that sticks out to me because I'm a comic book fan is Superman 2, which originally was directed by Richard Donner, but he left the project halfway through and it was taken over by somebody else, I think Terrence Stamp or something like that. And fans petitioned for 20 years to get the cut Richard Donner did made, and finally around the time Superman Returns was coming out, Warner Brothers re-entered and allowed Richard Donner to remake the film with his footage. So there are two distinct versions of Superman 2. There's several films like that. I think another one people like to bring up is Blade Runner, which has a...
Yeah.
That's different. Blade Runner. How is this? Because that's the director saying, what I originally did was not what I wanted to do. It's like with Star Wars 2. And I'm going to go back and tweak the movie so it lives up, it gets closer to my original vision.
Okay, but I mean, it is possible for people to go back and change it without ruining an industry.
I'm not saying it's ruining the industry.
The thing is, with video games, we get a choice. You know, they're going to release it as a DLC, evidently, because they can't just patch it in. And then you know, Jason, you can choose not to touch it, and therefore the ending stays the same. Whereas the people that weren't happy can download it, and then they get their different ending, whatever that may be. So, you know, well, at least with movies, you know, you don't really get any choice in it, because you buy it on DVD and it'll be different when all you wanted was the film on DVD. So,
I have to say, if they change it via DLC, I don't care.
No, they're going to have to, because they can't just patch in a new console.
Yeah,
like
I know, but
whether
I
it's
PDLC,
if it's PDLC, then
of course it will be paid DLC. That's why
I
don't care.
Get ready for another wave of anger, but I don't think they'll do that.
I'm not going to give them any more money. So if that's the way they will go, I don't care. I will watch it on YouTube. but that's it.
One question I've been wondering about, well, I guess two, but right now. Why if BioWare adds endings, does it really affect their artistic decision? Because the whole idea of Mass Effect, and I think this is why...
that's another thing, too, is it still remains to be seen what actually happened.
Yeah, and that's why I thought the reactions have been kind of iffy to begin with. But the idea that if they add endings, not necessarily remove the original ending, but say, like, oh, if you do this, you get this ending. If you do that, you get that ending, which was the original purpose of the Mass Effect 3 ending, which is what people, I think, initially were disappointed with, is that at the end, your decisions don't matter.
The problem is that it's going to be very difficult to do the kind of different ending that people are demanding
without
completely redoing the entire end sequence.
I assume it was a difficult project to handle with Mass Effect 3 in general, and I think that's kind of why people felt that this was a cop-out answer, was to just have one wrap-up. And I know there's like three different endings, but they're all basically the same thing with different parts changed.
Six very similar, very, very similar.
See, endings. I was expecting the original to the ending of Mass Effect 3 to be something like that of Fallout 1, 2, or New Vegas, where, you know, you get, like, little segments that sort of say, you know, and the genophage was cured, or the genophage wasn't cured, and the Krogans had to go through this, and, you know, and Shepard was regarded a hero, or Shepard was regarded as a martyr, and, you know.
No,
so I was expecting some sort of ending
that.
Like that.
That
would have worked perfectly.
you just get a colored energy wave. You should be happy.
Do you want like a teen comedy ending? Where you just laugh and like, so Rex went on to the Krogans or something like that. That would be funny. I've seen videos like that. They've had the teen comedy ending. They've had like the you know, like the generic happy ending where everybody celebrates the Star Wars ending and stuff like that. So it's kind of, I mean, I have to have the fan reactions to this, even if it's been on the baddie side for both parties. I'm not saying, I don't think one side is more right than the other, but both have been kind of insane with the
reactions. Yeah, there's a lot of different things going on here. Like, one of the things that was being demanded in that petition was basically a happy ending. And yeah, that's getting into a whole other argument where it's like, you know, and it's one, like we said, it's one thing to elaborate on what they have done. It's one thing to even provide new alternate endings.
It's another thing.
But, you know, like, demand, like, you need to change the entire tone of your ending.
Yeah, if they make a super happy, lovey-dovey ending, then I would be disappointed.
A happy ending defeats the point of what the game is about, what the theme, the running themes of the entire, some in the entire trilogy, but especially in the last chapter, and
that I will agree with you on, and I've seen a lot of people kind of gravitate towards that, like, oh, video gamers can't accept an unhappy ending and stuff like that. And yeah, I don't think that they should change it to make it so that it appeases people and the shepherd lives happily ever after and he walks off the beach on the sunset or something like that. That I think is stupid.
I actually think a bad ending for the series works great, and I'm fine with it. And no matter what they do, I think, though, it's not what my main problem was with the ending. My main problem wasn't even the content of the ending. I can live with it. It's not that big of a deal. The biggest problem, in my opinion, still is that my decisions during the game did not matter in the end. So I doubt they're going to fix that.
Yeah. Like I said, it was a difficult proposition to begin with. I can't imagine it was an easy task to undertake, what, almost a decade ago, to kind of cut out all of these different points and see what every action could have potentially lead up to. But the fact that at the end, it wasn't even like they threw away all those decisions anyhow, was kind of what bummed out people out.
Yeah, but
yeah,
the thing
I mean, to be fair, I do think that's overblown a lot, because if we look back at the last two Mass Effect games, you know, the ending was the same no matter what your choices were, one. And I understand this is different because this is the end of the trilogy and you don't have another game coming out, so that's different. But there's also, all the choices in Mass Effect aren't necessarily choices in what in content as much as they are the flavor of that content.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It changes details, but it doesn't change what happens. And that's always been true of all the games.
And I think it's because people expected that everything they did would have eventually paid off in the third game. It's kind of like how with movie trilogies, you can always, usually the second movie ends on a downer note, because Star Wars did this with, Han Carbonite and Luke and Cutoff and stuff like that. It ended because people knew it was concluded in the third one. If the third one had ended like that, then people would have been pissed off. And it's the same thing with Matrix Reloaded, I think, which ended on a cliffhanger, or to be continued.
But my problem was with the ending and how decisions influence it. I mean, the endings they have, they would work for me if with some very simple changes that implemented.
The ending should have
two
been
of
more
these endings basically did not work for in respect of the decisions I made during the game. I can spoil the game right now, I think.
Well, no, don't spoil it.
Yeah, you folks need to work on your spoiler cast. Because me and Daniel still haven't played it yet. And I do still want to play this game.
Yeah.
There's another thing I want to mention, which is that as part of this ending discussion, a big thing's come up where, you know, especially regarding the thing where, like, the ending doesn't reflect my choices. And people are always like, you know, if I played a Paragon the whole way and I still have the Renegade choice available at the end, like, that's not right. And, you know, first of all, the ending choices aren't split up into Paragon and Renegade. In fact, the ones...
That's true.
They're color-coded that way, but they're, you know, the one you would think to be the Paragon ending is actually the red ending, which is the Renegade color, right? So that's a tip that that doesn't matter for that specific choice. The other thing is a massive, like, one of the criticisms of the Paragon Renegade system in the past two games has been that it encourages players to go all the way one way or the other, right? The min-maxing attitude.
Yeah.
And people are completely ignoring the fact that in Mass Effect 3, BioWare actively tried to fix that issue there's no Paragon meter and Renegade meter. You have one reputation meter that fills with Paragon and Renegade points.
Yes.
So that it's supposed to encourage, you know, not trying to break your choices down by, oh man, am I going to keep with the Paragon themes? Am I going to keep the Renegade choices? It's, you know, what's the choice you want to make in that specific situation? And it's going to impact you, you know, based that way. And it's, so to that specific criticism of the ending where, oh, I didn't get my Ultra Paragon ending, or I didn't get my Ultra Renegade ending, I think that misses a lot of the point of what they're trying to do.
I would also say, just, you know, one, I point back to Alpha Protocol, which does away with that by just having it depend on the character you're interacting with. And two, is that just because you're good all the time doesn't necessarily mean you shouldn't have a bad option at the end, because situations vary, and that should be the point of a morality system in the game.
Exactly.
Is that you shouldn't be, oh, I'm good all the time, so I'm going to be good. It's like sometimes there are gray areas, and what's good may not necessarily be what's great for everybody.
And that's when I think choices, especially moral choices in games, work best, actually, when it's the choice between two grays.
And that's why I liked Fallout New Vegas, because instead of the karma system, although it's still there, you get a faction system where you side with the people who you agree with, but you piss off other people by doing so.
Yeah.
And that's what happens in life, is sometimes you agree with people, but you alienate everybody else in doing so, and that makes sense.
And yeah, and it works well for Mass Effect, you know. You side with the Krogans, you piss off the Salarians. You side with the Salarians, you piss the Krogans off.
Yeah, and that's kind of why I had issues with, I think, Mass Effect, in that, and not so much in the Mass Effect part, but it gives you so much time to think that sometimes I wish it was just a kind of reaction, because you don't want people to say, you know what, I'm just going to be good for the sake of being good. You kind of want them to make that snap decision in the middle of combat, instead of giving me like five, as long as you want to actually come up with an answer.
Yeah,
that's just me.
I kind of approached the game this way. So when I looked at the end of what my reputation was, it was like 3/4 Paragon, 1/4 Renegade or something like that. Because sometimes I just thought, man, this guy is being a dick to me, so I'm going to be a dick to him.
that's kind of how I played too, and I didn't worry about. You know, I needed my character to be a full renegade. I was like, no, you know, I'm going to make the choices that I feel my character would make in this situation. And, you know, as far as, I think it's really, really, I don't know what the right word is, but to say that the way the endings are makes all the choices over the three games meaningless is just so much hyperbole, I guess, is the word. Because most of the plot threads that come out of your choices are resolved before the end. There's very little besides the biggest questions with the Reapers and stuff. There's very little that's left to be resolved.
Well, they could have shown you the aftermath of your choices. That's what I'm
right. Well, and well, without spoiling, that's my personal biggest gripe with the ending. Is, you know, I'm okay with, you know, what you did. You still have these choices at the end. But they don't show you what happens on any of them. They show you the immediate aftermath with, like, the next 5 minutes. But the choices you make at the end of the game have very long-reaching effects on the entire story universe, and you see none of it. And that's
going to be something different, but what if that was the DLC plan? It's like maybe they'll have a story that's set 2 years into the future, and it kind of dealing with the repercussions of...
That would be extremely difficult based on the choice at the end of the game.
Okay.
I'll say, because each of the three choices completely rewrites the rules of the entire series in a different way. So it would be, like, I doubt we'll ever see a Mass Effect game take place after 3 in the timeline.
Well, I'm sure you can have a game after 3.
Well, it would be hard without being like, this is the real ending. Like, that's really the only way to do it.
Or you could just do what Deus Ex Invisible War did and just say, you know, those three endings? Well, all three of them happened.
There's other issues with the ending too that have to do more, that are more like plot hole kind of issues.
Yeah.
And those are the other issues I have with it, but.
But I think at the very least, BioWare needs to show the aftermath of your choices. I think at the very least, what BioWare needs to do is show you the aftermath of your choices.
Okay. Okay, I wanted to ask one more question, and this has been on my mind all week. I mean, one of the complaints I've heard about the Mass Effect 3, if BioWare changes the end, is that it degrades the artistic integrity of the franchise of the game of BioWare and stuff like that. And I was just naturally curious as to why is it stories protected under that but not gameplay elements?
Well, what do you mean?
Like,
a gameplay element that's fixed post-release is usually a bug, right?
But you can say that I've heard Resident Evil is always a good example. People hate, most people dislike the controls of the original games and stuff like that.
Right.
But and you still have people beg for Resident Evil 4 and 5 to have more third-person shooter type controls where you can move and shoot and stuff like that. But you'd never hear anybody defend that for being part of the artistic vision because the games are made around those controls. But
the difference is Resident Evil nowadays is not a survival horror.
Well, okay. 4, maybe. 5, no.
and that's why nobody complained about it when 4 came along, but everyone did when 5 came along. Because 5 is not a survival horror, but it's a survival horror mechanic.
I think 5 does a good job of working with the controllers. If you are, and Kid Icarus is another example where it's a game where a lot of people are having this disconnect with
but
control because
the,
it's not.
The thing is with a story, especially over 3 games where you make a lot of choices, people get really heavily invested in it, and the controls is not something that you can sort of, it's something you can sort of work around, but if the story doesn't match up, you can't really work around that.
But I don't think anybody's ever said that the end of Mass Effect 3 is something that. I have seen somebody say that ending of Mass Effect 3 is broken, which I think is stupid, but I was just curious because you always have people who beg for patches and upgrades and changes to gameplay, but that's never really seen. And I think I still see games as an interactive medium. And if you're saying that the core of the interaction is something you don't like, you want change, I don't see how that's any different than wanting to change the story of a game and saying that's protected under artistic integrity.
Well, it would depend. I mean,
It depends on everything. I don't think anybody's ever going to complain if you want to change the ending of a Mario game. But, because I'm sure we've all seen games, Uncharted 3 comes to mind, where they change the gunplay. But nobody said that, you know what, the gunplay shouldn't be changed because that's Naughty Dog's artistic vision.
Well, I think
Uncharted should be.
With a story, like, stories have been told a lot longer than games have been played. So I think that's why sort of artistic integrity is covered, because, you know, we have had people like Sir Arthur Conan Doyle and Robert Louis Stevenson, and they've been, you know, stories have been told for centuries, they've been told for millennia, you know, since humans have been able to communicate with each other properly. So I think it's the fact that we've got stories and people, they're just like, it's just a sort of old school sort of thing, telling a story, but playing a game and having an interaction with something, with a computer program essentially, is not. And, it, you know, if it doesn't go right, then that's what we have options for, you know. You turn on heavy aiming if you want that, you turn it off if you don't want it. So you can't turn on a story element, really, or turn it off.
But well, you can if you can skip it.
You know, I'm not going to pretend that I know the answer to this question, but I think maybe that, I don't know, gameplay is something that's inherently like the user's experience with the medium, right? Whereas story is something that is intricately crafted by the creator. And explicitly crafted to be the way it is.
Stories are told, but gameplay is sort of like, is sort of cooperation with the play, between the player and the game,
Kind of, yeah.
But I would say that's what this Mass Effect 3 thing is, even though it's, instead of being between the player and the game, it's between the player and the creator. And they're both trying to see, they're both trying to raise this, the game as their baby, and each has their own parenting style that they want to see implemented.
Well, at the same time, though, we've got people saying, you know, we want an ending that has more choices in it, and it's up to BioWare to decide how they're going to implement that.
Oh, yeah, so, it's always up to BioWare.
Yeah, it's always up to BioWare. So, you know...
I was just curious, because I, you know...
Because BioWare, if they really didn't want to change it, they could have said, no, we're not changing it.
Well, that's true. You don't want to piss off fans. You don't want to alienate people. I mean, they're in a situation where they're damned if they do, they're damned if they don't at this point. They're either going to lose the respect of some of the gamers or lose the, you know, fan support. Either way, you know, they're in a sticky situation.
Yeah, and I think I just want to reiterate that it's not for people reacting, you know, angrily against the supposed changes that are coming. It's not the fact that they're changing stuff necessarily. It's what brought about the change. It's that, and I don't want to use the word entitled because, like, it's getting into a whole different thing, and not everyone that's talking about the ending or complaining about the ending is fits that description at all. But it's just the way it came about with all, you know, it's this isn't the ending that I wanted, so you have to change it as the creator of the game. It's that kind of attitude. And it's not okay for Sir Arthur Conan Doyle stories either, or Superman 2, or whatever. It doesn't matter what medium it is. You know,
we kind of hashed this out last week. Is I still don't see any problem with them demanding it. If it's really up to BioWare if they decide to relent with it, because at the end of the day, I mean, as much as people want to protect the art of the industry or whatever, or any industry, it does come out to be a money game. And if this will kind of lose them more supporters than it will gain, then it's probably in BioWare's best interest to keep the fan support that they have and show that they're a flexible company and that they listen to their fans and that their fans' feedback is important to them. And I think that's kind of what happened with Sherlock Holmes, is that he's, you know, you see money, you bring back a character, you can write like 50 more books about the guy. He's still around. I mean, granted, the author's long dead now, but you can, you know, you have him, he's on a TV show, he's had 2 hit movies and stuff like that. So, it's a numbers game. It's BioWare value integrity over money, and we'll find out.
Yeah, I don't know. I think just the best things, like, I don't know how to phrase this, but, you know, it's like the fans don't always know what they want.
I agree with that, because as much as, you know, it's the fans don't necessarily know what they want. But they know what they don't want, if that makes any sense. They don't want this ending. They don't necessarily know what they want in view of it. Just because BioWare changes, it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be a better ending or something that's going to appease them more. It's just, you know, they don't want this ending. And, you know, it's a crapshoot. It's a tougher business because I've said it before, like, if you listen to fans, you'll end up making 50 different products at once because everybody wants something different and you can't appease them all. But so far, this hasn't really appeased anybody.
Yep.
Okay. And I guess this brings us to our question of the week. And I honestly haven't thought about this, but I figured since we're talking about Mass Effect and we've mentioned other games, if you had to pick one, and this is probably a difficult thing to think about, what is the most morally complex decision you've had to make in a video game?
It was probably Mass Effect 2, where you're asked whether you want to kill the heretic Geth or rewrite them. Here's an interesting point that I think it was Extra Credits threw up. And it was. This is also in criticism of the what we were saying about the morality system in Mass Effect 2. That, you know, you get Paragon if you choose to rewrite them, and you get Renegade if you choose to destroy them. Now, it would have been so much better, if you got Renegade for both of them, because neither of them are morally. No, nothing is morally wrong in that situation, because if you rewrite them, that's indoctrinating them against their will. And if you destroy them, you're killing them. You know?
Maybe they should have given you nothing for it. Like, to show
or,
that
yeah, it could either given you Renegade for both or nothing.
Yeah,
so I think
yeah.
It would have had a bigger impact if you'd have got Renegade for both of them. But yeah,
I think that's
a
really good one. Actually, that's probably one of my examples too.
Because you've got freedom of, you've got the right to live and against the right to free speech. You know, and I don't have the right to take away anybody's life but my own. You know, and I also don't have the right to tell anybody what to do other than me. So that one really got me thinking, especially when watching you know, extra credits commentary on that.
Okay. Are you Jason?
I'm gonna cheat and give three answers really quick. I'm sorry. There's just I don't know. One
so
is the one Daniel
most
just said.
Game.
One is the one Daniel just said. That was one of the tougher ones for me. Another is from Mass Effect 1, whether to kill the Rachni Queen or not, which is basically it's the same idea. Do you exterminate an entire race, basically? Or, you know, that's had a really volatile past. And by the way, I'll also mention what a shitty payoff that storyline had in Mass Effect 3. I'm disappointed about that. And then the other one, I would say, in The Witcher 2, which I won't get into spoilery detail since it's about to come out on 360, but at the end of Act 1, you're basically given a choice of who to side with, and it's just a totally... like two equal grays that you have to choose between. There's good and bad with both sides. And to make it more engaging, it completely changes, you know, everything about the second act, from where it is, what your objectives are, you know, how you're going through it, the people you interact with. It's a huge decision, and you just kind of, and it's like, ah, they do give you some time to mull it over, but yeah, that's me.
Okay. Martin?
I honestly have no idea. two of the things I thought about were already mentioned, the Rachni Queen and the indoctrination thing. I don't know. I can't think of anything from the top of my head right now.
Well, I'm gonna cheat and give two examples. One, the first isn't an example that's in the game. It's an example of something that kind of pisses me off as a gamer, and that's L.A. Noire with that whole the Jack Dahlia case where you're basically arresting people. I think there's one in particular where you don't have enough evidence to put either man aside, but you have to arrest one of them.
Oh, that right. Was really stupid.
Yeah.
That was really stupid. Up.
And to me, and that's kind of, to me, as a game, it's like, I know neither one of these men are guilty, but the game has to ask me, so who am I going to put away?
And not only that, it is compounded by the fact that never will you have, like, equal amounts of evidence to convict two people. And and not only that, is you get scolded if you put away the wrong person. And it's like,
no, you get scolded if you put away either one.
Do you? Well, in that case, it's like, why? Why? Because you don't make me feel good about myself.
Kind of
maybe
cool
that's the point.
If you look at it one way.
Well, it's kind of. I think that kind of hampers the decision because it's kind of like you said, where you kind of get if you get Renegade for both things, and this is kind of like it. No matter what you do, you get scolded for it, and it's kind of seen as a bad decision, which it is. But it's not a decision you can make. You're kind of forced. You know, the game hamfisted you to do it anyhow.
Yeah.
And the other one's a bit more simple, but I, you know, it's always easy to see, you know, like it's a good gray example is the, I think in Infamous 1, there's a part of the game where you have to choose between saving your girlfriend or saving like 12 random citizens. And it's one of those cases of the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the one. So you just, you know, you debate whether your girlfriend's worth killing 12 people for, if you're 12 people worth killing your girlfriend for.
I think based on that, another one.
Yeah.
Another one was the end of Saints Row 3.
Which Saints Row 3?
Oh, right. Where you're told to rescue Shandy or kill the guy. And I'm like, I felt so strongly about that decision. I was like, fuck you, I'm going and rescuing Shandy because she's been with me this entire fucking time.
Yeah, but doesn't the game kind of defeat the purpose since you can go back and replay it anyhow.
Oh yeah, but still, the fact that they started playing you know, I'm a Hero in the background, I was like, fuck this, I'm going and rescuing Shanti.
No, I do have the song selection in
there. Oh, okay, well then, Fable 2 also, the needs of the few versus the needs of the many, right?
Yeah.
The ending of Fable 2, that was a pretty tough one for me. I saved my dog, that was the decision.
And I think, I think this also has to speak to the quality. If there are games that there were certain characters, like for example, if any of you played Infamous, if Zeke was the person on the line, I'd have him dead in no time. Or the guy from Dead Rising. What's the janitor's name?
Otis.
Yes. If his life was put in danger, I'd kill him all the time. I think it's not quiet. Right. Where'd the guy get my number? But yes. I honestly don't know if I'll be done with Kid Icarus this week for a review. But I do recommend checking out the game. I think it's one of the cases, though, where Nintendo's really odd habit of being inconsistent with things kind of bite them in the ass. I honestly don't know why it is not a Kid Icarus demo in the eShop. We know they do retail demos, and it's the biggest game they've had since they started doing it, and no demo. So there's that. We can find us on iTunes. Check out the website. We'll have up something this week. Who knows? So for Martin, Daniel, Jason, and myself, this has been Dual World in episode 63.